The News Dissector with Danny Schechter, Fridays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Well, 6 minutes late, but it's worth waiting for. I'm Danny Schechter. I'm your News Dissector here with News Dissector Radio, back on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. We're going to be here for this hour talking about the economic collapse, talking about Occupy Wall Street, the encampment going on downtown here in New York City. That's beginning to get a lot of attention. This is an effort, in a sense, to try to create a Tahrir Square-type situation here in New York City. On Wall Street, and it's already causing a lot of controversy and a lot of arrests. So I'm going to be talking with some people who've been part of this, and we're going to be able to review what's going on and how effective it is or isn't. You can call and join this program at 888. That's a toll-free number, 874-4888. That number again, 888-874-4888. And first guest coming up soon is Nomi Prinz. Nomi is a writer. Nomi is an author in the sense that she writes fiction and nonfiction, a journalist, but also a former banker with Goldman Sachs, a former banker with Bear Stearns. She knows the industry from the inside out. She appears in my film Plunder, The Crime of Our Time, one of the more articulate people that I've interviewed. I interviewed her on Wall Street. It was a day that was freezing, and she was really great working with us and sharing her knowledge about the crimes behind the Wall Street collapse. So Nomi Prinz will be here in a minute. I just wanted to mention that I spent the past week in Istanbul, in Turkey. Istanbul is a mega city in this world. It may have as many as 20 million people living in there. It's growing exponentially. The economy of Turkey is growing while the economy of the United States is contracting. And moreover, Turkey is becoming more of a power regionally and economically in the Eastern Mediterranean. It's taken a very hostile view of Israel after that flotilla incident. It demanded an apology for Israel after 9 people on that boat were killed by Israeli soldiers, sailors, special forces, and the like. Israel has refused an apology. Turkey has broken military relations with Israel, has expelled the ambassador. And, you know, partly that's led to a whole realignment of its foreign policy. Its outreach is now to the Arab world. Its president, prime minister, rather, was in Egypt, Tunisia, Libya. They are expanding their influence around the world, and some people fear a new Ottoman Empire. Others are saying this is a good thing because, unlike Iran, this is really a secular state. It's not a religious state. It's Islamic, in culture, but it's also very diverse in its outlook. It's very cool in its approach to a lot of things, although there are serious human rights abuses. I was there as part of a Internet Freedom Conference speaking about the Internet and heard about what's going on there. You know, 3,700 websites have been blocked by filters of various kinds. And there's been a big battle for freedom of information in Turkey. In fact, this issue, which is, of course, an issue here in America as well, led to a protest last May of 60,000 people in Istanbul, unheard of, demanding the right to surf, demanding a free internet. And so, in a way, the Turkish activists have led the way on this whole issue of internet freedom. They're very sophisticated in their approach to it. The culture there has a very vital, political comic book, culture as well, with a lot of books of caricatures and, great sense of humor. It was a very interesting mix, of traditional people and very modern people, consumer culture aligned with the United States, but also critical, if you will. There's also, of course, the problem of the Kurds, the Kurdish community, 20 million people in Turkey. country has over 100 million people, so it's a big 70 million, I don't know the exact number, but it's a big country. It has a lot of big population, and there's been this running battle between the Kurdish community demanding autonomy, demanding human rights, the Turkish government. The Turkish government basically is relatively new. There were three military coups in Turkey since 1980, so the military has been a powerhouse there, but now they seem to have taken a back seat and let civilian leaders take over. So it's a very fascinating thing. I write about it. There's an essay that you might want to read. I've written three pieces, but one of them is on my blog today at newsdissector.com. It's about what I call know who. You know, when you as a journalist, you have know how. You want to know how to do things, but you also need to have connections with people. And I have a person in Istanbul who contributed to the media channel, which I edit, and he was very gracious and hospitable to me and spent a lot of time showing me around. And this is the kind of way when you travel somewhere, if there's somebody from the country who knows the language, who knows the culture, really becomes a guide to you, mentor, and it's the sort of thing that's really brilliant. You know, one of the things I did there, which was really cool, was I spoke at a high school in Turkey, and the teacher asked the kids to look me up on the internet and find out what I've written and read something I've written and raise questions about my work. And so I sat there, and one by one, these students asked some of the sharpest questions that I've been asked about articles I've written, contradictions in those articles, where I stand on a variety of issues. And it was a really thrilling experience for me. So all of that is in my blog, newsdissector.com. Check it out. I do it every day, except on weekends, sometimes on weekends too when there's big news breaking. So that's what I'm doing. I also visited Al Jazeera Turk. Al Jazeera is setting up a service in Turkish in Turkey, and I visited their studios. 200 people are going to be working on it. And I have now become a writer for Al Jazeera on a part-time basis on their website. So I have a piece up on the website. I'll probably have another one next week. So I'm glad to be associated with Al Jazeera. I respect them a lot. Anyway, News Dissector Radio, my passion. I want you to say hello to Lucas. Hello.
Hello, everyone. How are you?
Okay. He's going to be joining us and working with our team of Catherine and Green Arrow, trying to make this show more visible, more powerful, and a better production on the radio here on PRN. We're hoping if we can get the attention of the programmers at WBAI to see if they would consider putting the program on the air. If you know anybody at BAI, why don't you mention it to them? At any rate, time for this week's News Dissector Radio. Hit it, Maestro.
Your Honor, for many years, I operated a Ponzi scheme through the investment advisory side of my business. I knew what I was doing was wrong, indeed criminal.
The shine on America's shoes got gold. When Wall Street stepped into the fold, Congress paid off workers laid off. Stanford, AIG, and Madoff. Credit swaps, credit stops, empty wallets, and empty shops, and bank walking in AAA. Grandpa loses 401k.
Yeah, that's the song Plunder. The actual theme song of my movie, Plunder the Crime of Our Time, which is available on DVD. You can check it out at plunderthecrimeofourtime.com. And one of the people in Plunder, a person who worked with the plunderers, is with us today, and her name is Nomi Prinz. Nomi, so happy to have you with us. Tell us
Thank
a little
you.
Bit about what you're doing now, and then I'd like to tell the audience more about you.
What am I doing now? Wow. I am, having left Wall Street ages ago, I'm doing a lot of writing and trying to keep tabs on, gosh, everything that's happening within the banking sector, the ties to Washington, how things that occur tend to get whitewashed by a lot of the media or ignored, or even if I bring them up or certain people bring them up, sort of pushed aside as our country continues to fall further into an economic abyss. And other than that, I just finished a novel, a historical novel, actually, that captures the 1929 crash.
Which sounds fascinating. It's called Black Tuesday, a
yes.
novel by Nomi Prinz, and it's coming out very soon, true?
Yeah, actually, it's available on Amazon as we speak, so it is, it's out there.
And this book is captures the romance, the desperation of one of our most fascinating historical epics, from a beleaguered immigrant community of the Lower East Side to the feral pit of Wall Street and the alluring glitter of Park Avenue. I'm reading from the blurb here. Nomi Prinz reveals a world of fraud, obsession, and economic devastation in a turbulent era that shines a revealing light on our current times. You know, it's interesting, you know, that you've gone backwards here while others are just fearing for the future, to see the roots of all of this, that this isn't the first bubble that's broken or the first crash that's occurred.
Yeah, and thank you for noticing that, because I feel like having done the research for the novel and also having looked at that historical period for other things that I've written, but really delving into it over the past year in specific research, is that there are phenomenal amounts of parallels between almost everything that was occurring through Wall Street, through the relationships with Washington, through how that impacted and how their misdeeds and misbehaviors and corruption and fraud hurt the overall economy for years and years, how you know, that's why there were so many job losses, and at the time the housing market crashed, and as the market crashed, and the parallels are staggering. And what's even more sadly staggering is that the fixes that ultimately, or some of the fixes that came into place after the crash and during the period of devastation of the Great Depression, have not even been considered. In this particular period, we're still calling it a Great Recession. There are economists calling what we're in, well, things are getting worse. Is this a double-dip recession, as if we had somewhere actually recovered on Main Street throughout the last few years?
All of this,
it's interesting.
All of this language seems to be designed to obscure, to confuse, to deflect away from what the reality is. I mean, the other day I was watching Paul Krugman on with Stephen Colbert, okay? And Stephen Colbert was his usual joking self and was saying, ha, you're not suggesting in any way, are you, Mr. Nobel Prize winner, that we are in a depression? Ha, ha, ha! And Krugman said, well, as a matter of fact, we are in a depression, okay?
Yeah.
And that's the D word. You know, the word that is rarely used to really explain what's going on here. And Krugman has sort of seems to have moved more to a more structural analysis of all of this. You know, he I thought started kind of in the center middle, left center middle, whatever, and seems to have moved further along as the situation deteriorates even more. I mean, we had a drop of 500 points in the market yesterday. What do you think is happening here? Are we on the verge of a economic collapse?
Yeah, I think we've been in the sort of initial phases of an economic collapse that's continuing to make itself known. And people like Krugman, who in the beginning were sort of thinking of plugs along the way, and have finally come to the conclusion that you can't actually continue to put Band-Aids on the Titanic and assume it's not going to sink. You know, I was saying that for years. My last book, It Takes a Pillage, made the specific point that we are in the beginning of a second Great Depression. I haven't felt that anywhere between now and then I've changed my mind. It's only manifested itself in a worse manner, and that's because there were no moves made to look at the real cause of the initial problems that came to light in the financial crisis period of 2008, when it was considered a crisis because the banks didn't have any money, and the banks were coming to the Fed for cheap loans and for subsidies and for guarantees from the FDIC and all the things that the banks pillaged from the Fed, from the Treasury Department, a small amount through TARP. When I say small, it was $700 billion. It was small relative to all the subsidies they got during the 2008 to mid-2009 period. But during all that time, it's not like that money, that help, those perks, those subsidies made the banking system structurally better, as an entity in itself, and also for the rest of the economy. So what we're seeing now, downgrades of Wells Fargo and Bank of America and Citigroup and Italian banks and Spanish, all of this is really part of the same problem. You know, these were banks that over-leveraged, that speculated by creating toxic assets made up at the very bottom levels of small amounts of subprime loans, and they're still in the system, and they because they were never addressed. And so
no, it's right. If we don't deal with it, it'll just all go away. I mean, there seems to be an addiction to denial in all of this, a way in which we want to avoid thinking that anything bad can happen. So if there's a little, you know, uptick somehow in the market, suddenly we're in a recovery, you know, for that day or the next day, and then boom, we're back down in the dumper. I mean, I just wanted to tell listeners here that you're listening to Nomi Prince, who is, as you're hearing, quite a brilliant analyst of all of this. I'm our biggest fan, or one of them, and I just want to point to some of her other work so you could write this down and go out and get these books, okay? Black Tuesday, her novel, just out on Amazon. I can't wait to read it. It Takes a Pillage, Epic Tale of Power, Deceit, and Untold Trillions. She also has Other People's Money, The Corporate Mugging of America, Jacked, How Conservatives Are Picking Your Pocket Whether You Voted for Them or Not, and The Trail, a financial thriller, which I found very sexy and held my attention. So I just want to point out that Nomi has written a lot of books. She's churning them out. I only have 11. She's going to pass me, I'm sure, in a week or two. She's just like pumping them out. But, you know, Nomi, what kind of impact do you think those of us who are trying to critique all this are having? I mean, there's a big protest here in New York, Occupy Wall Street. You have kids running around. It's sort of a Woodstock of activists, or a Bankstock of activists. Some of them are getting busted down on Wall Street. It's raining today, so there's a little bit of a hiatus going on. We're going to hear more about what's happening there in a minute. But do you see an opposition to all of this emerging, or are we stuck in a, how to put it, you know, a kind of media rut where we can't get the truth?
It's, sadly, I think it's the latter. The media, I just before I'm talking to you now, I just taped a segment over at CNN that'll air this weekend, and basically it was all about, you know, is Obama doing the right thing on the economy? Is it the Republicans? Is it, you know, is it political? And all of these issues that have nothing to do with what I said was a major structural bank problem that has not been addressed, where things are continuing to pour out, where therefore there's no confidence, therefore there's no mortgage restructuring, therefore there's no loans to small businesses, therefore there's job cuts, and that, you know, talking about little, not necessarily unuseful stimulus here and there, without addressing that problem is like that putting Band-Aids on the Titanic situation again, and this is what we're dealing with in Washington. So all power to everybody who is out trying to make this known and protest about this down in the Wall Street area. You know, it's covered a little bit by the media, but it's almost as if they're talking about some fringe group of people instead of the fact that, you know, these people are trying to bring attention to the fact that these banks, this area, has decimated the economy, and our political leadership is off the subject.
Yeah, and also, you know, the fact is that young people are victims of this crisis. They are not just, you know, protesting about something happening somewhere else. They don't have jobs. They don't have a future. They don't have opportunities. They know it, too. And that's why, you know, they're in the streets, and they're protesting and trying to lead. And you know, basically what we have is a lot of people patronizing them, or, you know, thinking that they're a bunch of idiots because they don't have the vocabulary of, you know, the financially literate, you know, and often that language is used to basically keep us uninformed. I mean, when I worked at ABC News and did the SNL crisis back in the 80s, you know, my boss took me aside. He said, Danny, let's be careful here because of the MeeGo effect. And I said, the huh, the who, the what? And he said, the Mego effect means mine eyes glaze over, that the audience can't handle all this detail and information. They're too unfamiliar with it. I said, well, what would I substitute Mego with? He said, well, try KISS. And what does that stand for? Keep it simple and stupid. Okay? So that's where we are right now. A media that's afraid of actually informing the American people, that often doesn't know the answers. I just did a piece on Al Jazeera about, look, you know, I flew through Germany, and, you know, on the airlines in Europe, you get actual newspapers to read. And on the airlines in America, you can buy, you know, a Sprite. You know, there is no, you know, kind of nutrition for the brain. And there they had the Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal and the International Herald Tribune. And as I looked at their coverage of the debt crisis, each one of those papers was saying something totally different. And one of the things that became clear was that the people that they're relying on to know what to do don't know what to do, don't have a clue, actually. So they are... The leaders like Angela, like Ms. Merkel in Germany and others, are relying on their financial advisors, who are relying on the message points of financial media, and the deception machine just goes up the chain. And, you know, nobody knows what to do or how to do it. And so they've come up with austerity as an approach, which, of course, creates no new jobs and makes life miserable for more and more people. And we've seen a deepening that in Europe and the international. The Herald Tribune had an interview with a guy that works for the Bank of England, an American who works for the Bank of England, and this is totally wrong. Don't do this. This austerity thing is gonna wreck our economy. We need, in a crisis, to put some money in, to create some jobs, to do something. And, you know, and they said, well, he's living in you know, a fantasy world, this guy, to think that anybody would agree with that.
In respect to the leadership of these countries, you know, they've been getting it all wrong. I mean, you have individuals who are poking up, and of course the people in the streets and in various countries that are being used kind of as fodder to pay back bad bank debt between countries and assets gone wrong and speculation gone awful with. You know, their pension funds or their future jobs or their current jobs. And there's no way that combination creates a stronger economy. So there's no way that economy, which is not going to get stronger, can repay that debt. So it's like throwing throwing debt down a hole, but at the same time, it's like choking the air off of the people at the bottom of the hole, and it's grossly unfair, and it's also not economically intelligent. And unfortunately, it goes back to the leadership question, and that's that, you know, we have people like Tim Geithner going to Europe and saying, you know, you should continue to do what we did, which is basically print money for the banking system, although he didn't say it like that, and try to cut spending, and it's not a way to invigorate the economy because it continues to ignore the actual problem. We have $1.6 trillion worth of Treasury securities that were created as debt by the Treasury Department out of the $4 trillion they created, but $1.6 trillion just hanging out on the Federal Reserve's books doing absolutely nothing.
Well, you know, it's incredible that the Fed is back up to its old tricks again, but not doing very much to create jobs. Senator Sanders in Vermont made this point the other day about their latest little maneuver here after making a statement basically that scared the pants off everybody in the markets, basically that the American economy was on the verge. And, you know, so they've come up with a sort of a little tinkering around reform, but they're not really doing what needs to be done. Just one last point here, Nomi, if you will. I mean, we're seeing some prosecutions now of people on insider trading, but none of the executives who are responsible for the housing problems and the fraud that was pervasive seem to be being indicted.
No, we've had this parade of some of these CEOs in front of the investigative committees in Congress, you know, in front of the Senate and so forth, who've basically managed to evade all culpability for having been the deciding factors in allowing the securities that were created that sucked people's mortgages into them that sucked leverage, that sucked debt, that sucked, you know, small towns in Iceland and Greece and Norway into buying them. And were the people that okayed this mechanism, were the people that drove from the bottom all of these loans and are absolutely escaping from this unscathed.
Yeah, so would you agree with my call, not for a bailout, but a jailout? I mean, I think there has to be some economic justice here.
There has to be economic justice. There also has to be a dissection of these institutions. We are still, you know, 3 years after the beginning of this financial crisis, in a world where Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley are treated as banks, from like banks that deal with like real common people, which they don't, because they have that ability to get money from the Fed to back them if they need it, to get cheap money from the discount window, to get loans if they need it in return for bad assets that are still on their books. So we have Bank of America being anemic and insolvent. We have Citigroup, you know, following Wells Fargo, and they're all in the midst of massive civil suits. And yes, the attorney generals of some states trying to go after them for the mortgage fraud elements of what happened. But from the top, the people that, you know, grew these firms, that made these decisions, that were there at the meetings, that knew what they wanted to do to get their transactions taken care of, no matter what risk that threw upon the rest of the economy and the rest of the investors in those small towns, not necessarily the big hedge funds. I don't really care that they lost money. And it's completely cut off from any sort of legal culpability.
And now I have
the
to, unfortunately,
don't even come from their own pockets.
Unfortunately, I have to cut you off. I finally met my match here. You know, I thought I was articulate. I thought I could really run all this down quickly, but I'm no match for you, Nomi. You got it down, and you've really helped, you know, arouse in a very passionate and informed way people's concern on this issue. Your new book, Black Tuesday, a novel. Can't wait to read it. Can't wait to hear people's reactions to it. So pleased that you can come on. Please come back sometime soon so we can continue this basic discussion and discourse. I like your use of that word, dissect. It's something that's close to my own heart as well. And we'll be seeing you soon. Nomi Prince here on News Dissector Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.com.
To show up all night, can't sleep right, my head's tight. Got my food, clothes, books, and it looks like there's holes in my shoes. What to do? My credit card's full, and it's due. No job, no time, no reason, no rhyme. Gotta get it together before I'm a mess. Walk the line between room and success. That's no joke.
And to Wachovia, Wells Fargo, Sally Mae, to MasterCard and Citibank, and also B of A. American Express and Visa Morgan Stanley too.
This is Danny Schechter, your News Dissector. That's a song from my film, In Debt We Trust, that came out in 2006, predicting the financial crisis, and to which I was sort of called an alarmist. I was an idiot. I didn't know what I was talking about until, guess what, there was a meltdown, and suddenly I went from being a zero to a hero, and, you know, have continued to follow these issues as closely as I can in my blog at newsdissector.com, articles for Al Jazeera and other websites. websites. I'm trying as best I can to inform this issue. And for several years now, I felt very alone. It was very frustrating. Everybody was working on every other issue except the economy and economic justice. That is beginning to change. I'm happy to report. And down on Wall Street in the last week now and continuing until the people are driven out of Wall Street, is a campaign called Occupy Wall Street. And they are using tweets, Twitter, basically, to mobilize people. And we have some people who have been down on Wall Street. I've been there. Kat's been down there. We're going to talk about what we've observed and what's actually going on there. I just wanted to start off. I printed out some of the tweets that, you know, were current maybe an hour ago. Okay. Here's live with Occupy Wall Street Legal Observer. It seems that police are the ones who've occupied Wall Street. Here's somebody called Dega Omar. We are too broke to pay for education and health care, but we can afford the war in Libya, Iraq, and Afghanistan. Occupy Wall Street. Max Kaiser, the financial analyst based in Paris who does programs on Press TV and RT, says Occupy Wall Street should take credit for today's crash on Wall Street and promise plenty more where that came from. This is war, he says. I was just interviewed on Max Kaiser's program. You can find it on YouTube. We had quite an animated discussion and debate about what's happening. Here's Anonymous writing, let's make a deal, FBI. You keep on arresting random citizens while we dismantle the system. Jasmine Spirit writes, I cannot understand why people are frightened of new ideas. I'm frightened of the old ones. She's quoting here Nikola Tesla, who said that some years back. And there are many others. Here's a message to the police from one of the activists saying, listen, NYPD, please talk slowly and clearly. Many of us are monitoring your radios, and we can't understand what you're saying for Occupy Wall Street, okay? Make Wall Street all over again, says someone else. And this is just continuing, a stream of tweets, Occupy, hashtag Occupy Wall Street. So you should check that out. Now, I'm joined now by Danny Panzella. He's been down there. He's an activist who's particularly been involved in the campaign against the Federal Reserve Bank. Danny, are you there?
I'm here, Dan. It's great to have you on the show.
Okay, so it's another Danny. We only allow Dannys on the show, if possible, or you have to have a D in your name, as some of the people here do. Chris Derendorf is here, and Catherine D. Waters is here, and various other people. Danny, give us a little feel for how this whole thing started and got built up down at Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, for a few months I've been watching the buzz build up on the internet, like you said, on the social networking sites, Facebook and Twitter, in the lead up. And there are several organizations that have kind of tried to claim ownership over the Occupy Wall Street protests. But if you go down and you spend some time down there, what you realize is that there's really no organization that's fully responsible. But what has happened is this organic community has kind of grown up out of this shared concern or really this desire for revolution for the corrupt political and economic system that we're forced to live under. So it's really quite an amazing thing to see. You've got like this media center where they're tweeting from and uploading video and kind of getting the word out so that the press can cover it and the bloggers can cover it. And then you've got the kitchen area where they've got food. People are sending pizzas and food and donations of water and all types of stuff. They're delivery men just showing up with stacks of pizzas and other food.
Probably sent by some of the people in the Wall Street firms who are themselves disgusted with what's going on. They see their bosses making giant bonuses, and they see how the economy is collapsing, in part because of their own efforts. So I wouldn't underestimate the degree of guilt that is on Wall Street right now. And the fact that these kids are out there, I think, has livened up the place quite a bit. Of course, the police have been been typically reactive, brutal even. There have been arrests. There are two YouTube videos of some pretty violent police actions over minor things. Kat, you were telling me about one the other day of just people had tarps or something because of rain.
They were just trying to cover their electrical equipment from the rain with tarps. It wasn't a structure. It wasn't, you know, like, what's the term structure? It was just using a tarp as a blanket. And the cops were calling it a structure and physically trying to take and uncover the electrical equipment, and their stuff was going to be exposed to the rain. So it's a normal response for them to try to protect their equipment, and, you know, the cop was going to be physically removing these people and preventing them from protecting their stuff.
Well, you know, it's great being on the radio right now. It's hard for me to take other phone calls, but I will call you back. Thank you. Okay, so here we have a situation where people are involved. Lewis is also on with us. Introduce yourself to us, if you wouldn't mind, and tell us about your experiences at Occupy Wall Street. Hello? Is he there? Lewis. Follow me.
Hello.
Here. Yeah, so hi. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, so
introduce
yourself. Tell us what your experience has been at Occupy Wall Street.
Well, my name is Lewis. I've been here a couple of days now, and the experience here is just beautiful. You know, everybody has different opinions, and we just all came for a common cause. And, I mean, we just know that we want justice in essence. Because there's too many things going on and nobody's being held accountable.
Yeah, I mean...
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's just beautiful right now.
Where are you right now? Where are you calling from?
I'm inside a truck because it's raining. It's raining very hard over here. So me and a couple of other guys went inside a U-Haul truck. And, you know, we're taking shelter from the rain. But a lot of other people are still inside the park and weathering the rain now.
This is the park that used to be called Liberty Plaza Park. It's at Liberty and Broadway in Lower Manhattan. It was one of the places that was damaged by 9/11. It was rebuilt, and it is the place where the people are actually staying or occupying, if you will. And the police have surrounded it basically and are allowing people to have their discourse there. Lewis, what have you learned in being there?
Well, I have learned I'm not alone because prior to this, I had tried talking to other people, you know, that people from my workplace, from school, just where I live, from my neighborhood, and they seem to be too involved in the lie that they don't care or they don't know, and they don't have that curiosity to try and get involved. But over here, it's like all these people, they know what's going on, and they have the heart to try and fight.
Yeah, I mean, it's true that, you know, you don't have, it's not exactly an economics a seminar at Harvard there. You know, it's not like people are coming out with, you know, term papers and you know, policy proposals, and hence they're not being taken seriously. But, you know, I think it should be taken very seriously. And Michael Moore was on television last night basically calling for support for this. A lot of people are now calling for support for Occupy Wall Street. Kat, your experience there.
The few days that I was there, like all day, you know, Saturday was the first day where a lot of the crowd, I mean, it was crowded, and they rushed, stormed the Wall Street area. Wall Street and William was the intersection, and, you know, again, just, you know, peaceful protesting, not anything violent. They do make a point of just being, you know, like, firm in their resolve, but at the same time, you know, trying at all costs to avoid violence and even avoid resisting arrest.
Danny, tell us a little bit about how this is organized, what this general assembly is, how people speak down there. I was very taken with that. They had no sound system, and yet, you know, I was, thanks to Kat, you know, gave a little minor oration down there, and I got a good response, I think, talking about my film Plunder, talking about some of the issues. How is it working down there, Danny?
Well, the General Assembly basically is a forum where anybody can come and share their ideas. The crowd is made up of a lot of different ideologies. There are libertarians, there are socialists, there are anarcho-capitalists, anarcho-communists. There's a lot of different people that are represented. All the decisions are made democratically by vote during the General Assembly. And, everybody's given an opportunity if they want to share with the crowd. So it's a great way to, it may not be a Harvard thing, but there's definitely a lot of intelligence, a lot of well-researched and thought-out solutions are being proposed. So, and you may not agree with everything, but the important thing is that there's a dialogue happening and people are sharing these ideas with each other.
Well, I think it's a good way to learn, maybe a better way to learn, by actually doing, seeing how the forces of the state, the forces of Wall Street are trying to restrict, a public expression, are trying to threaten some of these folks that are down there, and yet their determination to be there. They realize how important Wall Street is to the world in terms of an economic center and a place, really a crime scene, in my view. Okay? And they're there to try to bring this point home, and it's part of the whole struggle that's taking place. We've had it on our program in the past, last week or 2 weeks ago, a woman who's, I think, in her 90s in Bedford-Stuyvesant, who, basically was fighting an eviction there, and the neighborhood turned out. And it turns out that Green Arrow here lives in that neighborhood, and was part of some protests afterwards. What happened? What's going on with her?
Well, Mary Lee Ward is a neighbor of mine. She lives down the street from me. Real quick, Danny, I'd just like to say one thing. I noticed, to make an observation, Gil Scott Heron once said that four-letter words or four-syllable words won't make you a poet. They'll only illustrate how shallow you are and let everybody know it. I think Occupy Wall Street, we need to focus, as your last guest did. The only five-syllable word he said was curiosity. It was wonderful, very direct. Mary Lee Ward, the campaign is going great. We had 500 people marching down Bed-Stuy, down my block. It was really wonderful to photograph and videotape this 82-year-old woman wearing this beautiful orange hat with dignity for all as her message, saying that if she has to walk barefoot to Washington to talk to somebody, that she will do it. And
well, it's important because, these cases tend to be anonymous. They tend to not be in the public consciousness. And here in this neighborhood, neighbors turned out to support this woman, to try to keep her in her home. She spoke. She was on the radio show speaking. I think it was one of her first media appearances ever. She wasn't quite sure what to say. But, the fact is that it's the ordinary people who are inspiring, change. It's not, change doesn't come from the top down. It doesn't come from, brilliant intellectuals necessarily, although there are many who have played a role in all of this. But it's the young people. It's the people who are inspired by this, who are willing to basically suspend their lives and take part in things like that. That's what made Tahrir Square successful in Egypt, in Tunisia, the revolution there. It could happen here, even though, of course, we're all very skeptical, we're all very cynical. We all think that, it's just a bunch of kids, and there were some kids there, including some topless girls and, activist, guys with hair down to their pupics, et cetera and so forth. But what I was impressed with was their seriousness, their sense of responsibility to each other. When I went to speak, this was really unbelievable. There was no sound system. So they want people to be able to hear the speech.
They're not allowed to.
They're not allowed to have a sound system. So what do? They create a human sound system. Here's how they do it. I start speaking, and I speak in phrases. People repeat the phrases, and that broadcasts out to the whole crowd. Example. The financial system is broken.
The financial system is broken.
It's time for dramatic change.
It's time for dramatic change.
We need a jail out, not a bailout.
We need a jailout, not a bailout.
So here we are at a radio station showing you how this happened in the square. And people basically applaud by using their fingers to acknowledge the speaker. And I think it was fascinating for me to observe it. I mean, this is a generation that's grown up on social media. It's not reading the Wall Street Journal, okay? It's tweeting. It's on Facebook. It's listening to alternative media. And, you know, in a sense, it's a model for how a message goes viral. You know, they say on YouTube, a video can go viral. You know, it starts off and then it gets repeated and played by many people, et cetera, and so forth. And, you know, I've seen this phenomena with Al Jazeera. You know, I've written articles, 200,000 people read them, and they, you know, kind of tweet them, and they comment on them, and I get letters on them. This is a kind of democratic type of communication that's so desperately needed, and that's what we're trying to do here at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. The number 874-4888. If you've been at Occupy Wall Street and want to say something, Danny Pensella, where do you think this will sustain itself, or will it peter out?
I'm sorry, Dan, I missed that.
Oh, how could you miss something golden like that? I'm kidding. Every word must be... No, what I was saying was, do you think it'll peter out, or will it grow?
Well, it seems to be slowly growing, so hopefully it'll continue that trend. I'd like to see more people come out. You know, I find that a lot of people, you know, I come from a right-wing background, and I find a lot of people...
That's probably why you didn't hear my words. Okay, it's okay. I'm joking.
So I have a lot of the people criticizing it, saying, oh, they're just a bunch of commies down there. But I really like to challenge people from the right, Tea Partiers and such, who basically, they have the same gripes with the government. Come down and talk to people and share your ideas and discuss and let's, because we really all need to work together. The left and the right need to work together against the real enemy, which is that political economic class that is oppressing all of us.
Yeah, it's interesting. Ron Paul has apparently been in conversation with Ralph Nader. And they're considering mounting a joint run.
Awesome.
That's a significant development, you know. And Barney Frank, when he was the chairman of the Financial Services Committee, worked with Ron Paul in trying to get an audit of the Federal Reserve Bank. I mean, these labels are, you know, really keeping us apart. They're not really helping people understand and learn from each other. That's not to say there aren't significant differences between some of the Tea Party crowd and people who are basically in the more populist movements, labor movements and the like. There are. And there are some differences that can't be bridged easily. But it is important, however, for us to communicate the fact that there's been a takeover in this country by a financial elite that really has run our government, has really controlled the show. And it's not just, you know, I went to a libertarian party 2 weeks ago. Kat invited me to come to this Liberty Fest, and I went, you know, skeptical and all this. And I heard some people there talking about the victims of the Iraq War. They were talking about the human beings who live in Iraq, the civilians, in very passionate and caring and compassionate terms, and indicting the media for not covering it. And, you know, in a way, I haven't really been hearing that type of passion, you know, in left-wing forums. And I was very impressed by it. So I think we have to be sort of open-minded and willing to dialogue with each other. And this is what takes place there on Wall Street and Occupy Wall Street. That people
Absolutely.
From different backgrounds are there, like you, Danny. I mean, and me, Danny, you know.
Well, Dan, I actually am one of the organizers of that Liberty Fest event that you attended, and I'm very glad that you had a good time. And that's exactly what the goal of that event was, to bring different people. You know, Kevin Zeese was one of our speakers, and he's very involved. He's been down at Wall Street for the past week. And, you know, we're a libertarian movement. We're very anti-war. and anti-corporate monopoly.
Hold on, Danny. One quick comment from Kat, because we have to move now. We're running out of time. The clock doesn't work in this room, so how would we know? Go ahead.
I wanted to give a high five out for Roseanne Barr, who also showed up on Wall Street. And if anybody knows how to get in touch with her, maybe she could. She'd like to say a few things.
Let's get her on the show. Roseanne, are you listening? You're welcome anytime. Anyway, I'm Danny Schechter. I'm your News Dissector. This is News Dissector Radio, heard every week at this time on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. There'll be a podcast posted later today. It'll also be in my blog at NewsDissector.com. You can write to me at Dissector, D-I-S-S-E-C-T-O-R, at MediaChannel.org, and share your comments on the program and your suggestions for how we might improve it. Lucas here is going to be joining us and trying to improve the radio show. We're hoping that we can get more people to hear it and get more people to participate in it. Thank you to the people at Occupy Wall Street for participating. It's a rough time to reach people because it's pouring out there right now, and, you know, to get them on the phone and all the rest of that is asking a lot. But we did get a few folks here. So thanks for listening. Thanks for being here. We'll be back same time, same station next week. Be here.
Got free money, but you have to pay. Got free money, but you have to pay.
Shop till you drop.
The American way. Got free money, but you have to pay.
From the sea to the shining sea.
Got free money, but you have to pay.
Signing up for bankruptcy.
Got free money, but you have to pay.
Everyone's a card, and blind like a crack. As they send it in the mail, soon your house is for sale. MasterCard, please push in the squeeze. You're pre-approved by Amex. The credit scam.
Got free money, but you have to pay.